Voltron fans, this is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And this is towards the end of July that we're doing this recording, and I just recently got back from San Diego Comic-Con. All kinds of good stuff happening there. We want to talk a little bit about it here. We want to talk a little bit about Voltron collecting, and we've got a few collectors with us today. So I'm going to introduce them right away, right off the bat, because I want to bring them in here and talk about everything. All right, so there's two guys that are going to be with us that you've seen before, and one person who's brand new blood to the podcast. I'll introduce the two returning people, and then I'll introduce the new one. So here we go. Returning once again, we have from our podcast that we did where we introduced him as one of the greatest Voltron collectors out there, Mark Oliver.
Hey, Mark, how you doing? Thanks for having me back on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Mark. No problem. Good to have you back, dude.
Thank you.
And then also, coming back again, he helped me with the Vehicle Voltron episodes, the Voltron the Third Dimension episodes, and I want to bring back Greg Tyler. Welcome, Greg.
Mark, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks, Greg. And then, brand new to the podcast, first time ever on the podcast, a great Voltron collector here, we've got Doug Snyder. Doug, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, cool. So why don't we get really just refreshed with you guys and see where you guys have been at recently. And I'll start with Doug. Doug, this is your first time on the podcast, so I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. Where do you come from in the world of Voltron?
Well, I'm a old-time fan. Basically, I was about 8 years old when I was first watching Voltron in the 80s, and I remember in my area, Vehicle Voltron was the one that was on Channel 22, and whenever there was a commercial on saying that Voltron was on at this time and this time, they aired Lion showing for the commercial. So I thought, oh, well, that must mean that Lion is on at 4 in the morning and Vehicle's on it in the afternoon. So lo and behold, I annoyed the hell out of my parents by waking up at 3:30 in the morning to get ready to watch Voltron at 4 in the morning to find Vehicle Voltron showing at 4 in the morning. So
okay.
Eventually they did switch over to Lion, and that was my preference.
Okay, and how did you get started in Voltron collecting?
I had some pieces when I was a kid. I remember one time, I think my 9th birthday, my dad came home late from work with his big bag, and I was up at the top of the stairs, and I was like, what's that? And he goes, nothing. Go to bed. Okay. And so next morning, I came downstairs, and on the dining room table was the, for all the good guys, all the Panache Place figures, just the pilots. And then also the LGN pullback Voltron.
Nice.
As well as my grandmother got me a the Parker Brothers board game.
Nice.
So, yeah. And unfortunately, I had to essentially replace every single piece as I came back into collecting.
So when did you come back into collecting?
It was probably late 90s, like 99, and my sister curses herself for doing this. She looked around at Goodwill and found an Orko, and she was like, look, I found Orko from He-Man. And I was like, I could get my stuff back and get stuff I never had, because I never had the Matchbox sets. They were way too expensive for us. I had a hand-me-down Panache Place Voltron. And when I replaced him, I was pleasantly surprised that all Lions did have cockpit doors, because mine did not when I got the hand-me-down. The hand-me-down I got was thrashed beyond belief.
Wow. Wow. All right, so let's talk to Greg, and let's find out from you, Greg, what's happening lately. Anything new?
Not much. I know the last time I was on for the Third Dimension podcast, you had asked me how my crazy hobby project is coming along, and I'm still plugging away at it at a snail's pace. The hobby project is making a 3D printable vehicle team Voltron in the style of the Panache Place toys. And so I'm still working at a snail's pace on it. No ETA on when I'll have that thing done, but you know, it's a hobby project, and like the rest of you, I do have a life, so well, those things go pretty slowly.
I've been thinking about this since the last time we talked, and I thought, you know, I can guarantee that you can put an ETA of it. It's going to be your Panache Plate style Voltron will be ready before the live action movie will be out.
Wow. Depending on your perspective, how you interpret that other event, that I'll either be really, really fast or really, really slow.
I'm just thinking the amount of time it might take to actually get a live action Voltron movie out there, I think you're going to be done before then.
Well, I sure hope so. And yet I don't, because I would like to see a live action movie sometime in my lifetime. But that's about it.
Let's bring Mark back. Mark, what's new with you, dude?
Not too much. Still buying Voltron merchandise. I got the Voltron, the 30th anniversary Jumbo Lion Force Voltron yesterday.
We saw it.
Yeah, I got that yesterday. It was a big surprise, because usually I get like an email notification. I just came home and all of a sudden it was ringed by the front door, and I'm like, wow, you know, I was really surprised. So opened up, I like it a lot. It's really nice. I mean, it's comparable to the older Shogun Warrior set that came out by Toynami back, I think it was like 2008. But other than that, I got that. I just recently bought the Nutcracker at the Voltron store, and I got the Han Solo ring. And so I've been basically working for Voltron merchandise for the last, I don't know, 6 months.
Cool.
Right. So, cool. But yeah, other than that, not too much. Getting ready for, hopefully get ready for New York Comic Con coming up in October. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to a lot of things. But first off, I have to say about the things that we saw at San Diego Comic Con. So at San Diego Comic Con, we were at the Toynami booth. And Toynami has a Voltron Ultimate DX Transforming SD Voltron, which was their exclusive for San Diego Comic-Con. It's something you've never seen before. You've seen the Super Deformed, the smaller one. But this one is actually fully transformable. It has mini pilot figures included. And it has a high shine with a metallic paint finish. And it was a show-only exclusive. The five lions will form Voltron and each transform separately. So they were putting that at a price at $150, and every time we went to the Toynami booth, it was sold out. So you can get those on eBay right now, upwards of anywhere from like $190 to $250. So that was an interesting piece. And then also they were still selling the one that you just got, Mark, the 2 foot tall one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they were still selling the Super Deformed Voltron, the cheaper one.
Okay, for the one for $80, I believe.
Right, right. Yeah, okay. That was the one. But as I looked up at the board at the Toynami booth every day, it always seemed like most of the Voltron ones were sold out, except for the $250 one. So things are still going strong, it looks like, for George and the team at Toynami. We were also looking at the Sideshow Collectibles booth. So this is the first time that Sideshow has shown something at Comic-Con that was Voltron-related. But this one was only a prototype maquette, and it was all gray. You know, it was not even painted. The thing about that one was, it was an interesting story about that. Apparently, Sideshow has a license from DreamWorks to be able to make these. And They've got a design team that got together on it. And I've got a little bit of information about this. I wasn't able to talk to the designer about it because apparently he had left soon before I got there. I went out to a website called statueforum.com. Have you guys ever been there?
No, I haven't. No.
I've never heard of it.
Statueforum.com has a forum called Statue Talk-Forum Supporters, and then they had a section for Sideshow Collectibles. And the name of this thread was Voltron Sideshow Statues Will Harbottle. So the guy that was writing this, his name was Ego on Statue Forums. And apparently he works for Sideshow. So he said, just to chime in, yes, this is Sideshow's take on Voltron, just like He-Man and Skeletor. And he said he was shocked that there's so much meh reaction to this, but you can't please everyone. Just like He-Man and Skeletor, this wasn't meant to be a screen grab of the cartoon, more so what the show looked like and felt like to us as a kid, and then translating that to a more hyper-realistic modern take, essentially what we would do if we could make a film. So we worked with Josh Nizzi on the design, and if you aren't familiar with his work, he's one of the robot go-to guys, and you can look at his website at www.joshnizzi.com. That's N-I-Z-Z-I. Josh was awesome to work with, and this was his basic art direction given to him with coming up with the look. Imagine Michael Bay's Voltron as a 10 and the cartoon show as a 1 on a 1 to 10 scale. We want this to be a 4, not quite halfway to what Bay would do. Well, Josh delivered, and with minimal adjustments, Zane Yarbrough was able to do a back view to match, and we had solid concept art for Will to start from. From there, Will worked directly with J.P. Mavinga, one of our senior concept designers, to make sure things could translate from the concept art to 3D. J.P. did tons of additional designs, close-ups, detail shots, and paint-overs throughout the sculpt process. To the team, this was a piece that had been seen in person, and he's 24 inches bottom of foot to top of head. That's 27 inches total. There's a base on it. He almost didn't go to SDCC in this unpainted state, but the team wanted this to be seen in person as its first reveal, painted or not, and it's a pretty amazing paint piece to see, and talking to fans on the floor, it was pretty universally applauded, which was awesome. This isn't for everyone, but this was another passion piece for me in particular because I'm definitely an 80s cartoon kid through and through, and that's who I wanted to wow with this piece, knowing some might be let down because only 1,000% faithful to the original would do. Hopefully someone could give them that version, but we wanted to make this version, and I and we love it. So that's what he said about it. One thing I can say about it from looking at it and talking to somebody about it, it's on a base, and the base, what he was telling me was the base was the moon. And you can see when he's standing in it, there's some cracks in the surface. And it looks like, you know, Voltron landed on the moon and stayed in that spot. Now, when I was talking to the moon, why would it be the moon? Okay, because, you know, I don't remember seeing any stories with Voltron on the moon. Do you guys?
No, I don't remember any of it.
No, not offhand. I mean, you know, it's he does defend the universe in theory. So, you know, once you surpass the Go Lion episodes, I guess Voltron can literally go anywhere.
Right, so if it is a modern take of it, maybe at some point he would be on Earth's moon for some reason. I don't know. But, you know, that wouldn't be the normal, you know, point of reference for Voltron in my mind.
Well, I haven't seen it in person, but I will say it looks very impressive in the photos that I've seen. And obviously, you know, sometimes things look much better in person than they do in even the best of photographs. It looks really cool. I shudder to think what it's going to cost, only in the sense that I did some research on Sideshow's Optimus Prime that they did. I think it was for Michael Bay's Age of Extinction film, and I think it was in the range for a 24-inch statue of $1,200. So I have no clue what they plan to charge for Voltron, but if it's in that ballpark, unfortunately, I have to bow out because I could not justify that it cost, even though I really do like what I'm seeing.
Right, and here we are, you know, we're talking to some supreme Voltron collectors here, and if even you guys are willing to bow out, then what does that say? Are we talking to only elite people who might not be real true Voltron fans but just think it's really cool? Or are we actually really talking to the fans here? Because I can tell you, a lot of them are not used to having something that's just in statue form and that's it. They're used to, you know, wanting to do something with it, to transform it, to combine it, to you know, switch it into the lions and all that kind of stuff. So being that this is just a statue, you know, what should be the price on a statue?
See, I feel like, Mark, that, you know, to me, I would figure if we're talking price range, I say maybe $500 would be the top price I would go to pay for it. But being a collector, and to me, I feel like I think it's kind of like, for me, it's like I'm addicted to this. So I, unfortunately, you know, it's $1,200. I'll probably buy it. I mean, I have to get another job or work overtime or something, but eventually somewhere down the road, I'll eventually get it. But yeah, is $1,200 a lot of money? Of course it is. You can spend it on many other things, a vacation, this and that. But like I said, being a collector, it is basically something that I'm going to have to get eventually down the road. And might as well get it now, because if I don't get it now, who knows what the price will be 5, 6, 7 years later from then. So.
And the other thing is the way that they're saying the design was made was not based on any shows that are coming out or anything like that, or any movies or anything. It's just based on what they would like it to look like in a modern look. You know, not taking Voltron Force aside, taking, you know, Third Dimension and the original series aside, this is what the designers themselves came up with. So this is not in any way, and they wanted to point that out when we were there, this is not in any way indicative of anything you're actually going to see Voltron-wise in any new programs or anything.
I think it looked neat. In terms of, you know, does a statue have appeal versus something that transforms? I think that Toynami obviously has had some success with its Shogun Warriors releases from several years ago, the Go Lion and Die Rugger. I mean, if they hadn't been successful, then they wouldn't be coming out with the new Lion Force version now. So there is a market for that sort of thing. And I have to say, one of my favorite, I actually really like the Matty Collector items from a few years back, including Blazing Sword Voltron. It's not a statue, it's highly articulated, but it does not transform. And that's not a must-have feature for me. The statue looks cool. It doesn't meet my, you know, it doesn't look like what we've seen before. I'm okay with that in theory. It's just that price tag that's got me, I can't justify that kind of cost.
Have you guys ever actually seen a Voltron statue that was ever done by one of the great statue makers, like either Gentle Giant or Sideshow or anybody like that?
No, I haven't. No.
No, I haven't.
So this is a first.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, unless you count the promotional statues that Toynami and Matty Collector made that they've brought to Comic-Cons and all that, and I think one of those is the basis for that. What's been shown in that St. Louis Science Center recently, I think that's based on one of the models that maybe, I don't recall which of the manufacturers might have made that, but in terms of something being sold commercially, I'm not aware of any statues, no.
Right. WEP is famous for having their own statues, the one in their office and then the one at the St. Louis Science Center. But, yeah, I don't think they've ever allowed anybody to license a Voltron statue before. I think this is a first. So that's interesting. The way that the people at Sideshow were talking is this might not be the last. There might be more to come. So they sounded really excited.
Yeah. I'm certainly open to considering other options. Maybe if they... the $1,200 price tag is merely it's just speculation on my part based on looking at an Optimus that had been done, but maybe if it winds up being less expensive or if they have a downsized version for a reduced cost, then I'll certainly look their way.
Okay, all right. Well, I also wanted to talk about one more thing that's coming up soon, coming in September. Dynamite Entertainment is launching Voltron from the Ashes, an all-new 6-issue miniseries, written by Colin Bunn and illustrated by Blackie Shepherd. And it's set 200 years after the events of Dynamite's previous Voltron series. And it's going to introduce a new team to pilot the five lions that form the Defender of the Universe. So the debut issue will launch in September of 2015. We've already seen what appears to be the first two covers for the first two issues. So what do you guys think about that one?
Well, I've got all the comics from all the way back into the 80s, and I'll get it, and I'll read them. I usually only end up reading the comic maybe one time, and then, you know, putting it back in its slipcover and putting it in its, my box that I've got for Voltron. But overall, I'm really hoping that they stick to a schedule and actually come out with the comics on time, so that way it doesn't lose fan support by basically being like, oh, it's supposed to be every other month, and here we are 4 months out. What's going on?
Right. So if this time around they actually stuck to the schedule and released them timely, you'd be okay with that. It'd probably be good if they didn't miss any pages this time, too, right?
That would work, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm hoping that Dynamite pulls through with this one. It certainly is a different take on it, but it's sort of like going back to this, the same thing where Voltron was needed once more, and a brand new team takes on piloting Voltron. So it'll be interesting to see new characters that aren't Keith and Pidge and Hunk and Princess Allura, you know, and Lance. So let's find out, you know, let's see what happens. I'm looking forward to it. I'm also hoping to be able to talk to Colin and Blackie on the podcast.
That's cool. I've actually only seen the cover of the first issue, but I like the concept. I've heard some people speculate that maybe one of the new pilots would be a Drool. And again, that's just fan speculation as far as I know. But I think someone who might be someone like Sandu from the Vehicle Team episodes, you know, the pilot who sort of, went from just kind of a lemming following the Drool cause into someone who had more peaceful intentions. Someone in that role, or someone in a role like Worf from Star Trek The Next Generation, where he's, you know, maybe an outcast of some kind from his own people, or maybe they've, you know, the Galaxy Alliance has made peace with the Drools or something. That might be a fun or a different twist on the formula.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to say about this series?
I'm just kind of excited to see what the new team's going to be. Can the story adjust from, you know, with the new pilots, or from the old pilots to new pilots? I'm kind of excited to see about that. And as long as it's not Daniel as the pilot of the Black Lion, I'm sure people will be happy.
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
I know.
Yeah, from what Colin was describing it, it's going to be a little bit of a darker tone, and I think even Dan Jolly had remarked about how, when he went back to try to rewrite that origin story a little bit, he went, you know, with a little bit more darker tone and nature kind of feel to it. So it was more of a look at Voltron from an adult's perspective instead of a child's perspective. So, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm trying to figure out where their base of operations is going to be this time around. Is it still going to be Aris, or is it going to be somewhere else? You know, it sounds like it could be completely different.
The moon.
I hope it's not a moon base.
It could be anywhere. I mean, who knows? Maybe, without knowing any of the backstory of this comic, maybe Voltron was nearly defeated at some point and was abandoned. Maybe the original pilots are dead or something, and so Voltron's just laying there in a pile of wreckage. And maybe the base of operations has been built up around its wreckage, like the SDF-1 and Robotech or something, where they, you know, I mean, who knows? The sky's the limit if you jump ahead 200 years.
Right. So it'll certainly be interesting, and we're looking forward to a 6-issue series. And we're also looking forward to any new stuff that's coming along from WEP and from DreamWorks. So why don't we take this now into the direction where wherever you guys want to go? All right, we're talking about Voltron collectibles. So who wants to start, and what do you want to talk about?
I'll give it a shot. Now back to the statue. Does Greg? When you saw the thing for Optimus Prime, do you have any idea what it was made of, the statue-wise?
I honestly don't know. I was just looking for a size, you know, something of comparable size, because I saw that the Voltron was estimated to be about 24 inches, and so I was trying to find something similar, a robot of that size. Materials, I don't recall. Okay. I figured it would probably be made of similar materials.
Well, because one of the things that, you know, annoyed me was with the Voltron bookends – is on the Robeast, the snout blasters were extremely fragile. I mean, I had to glue mine back on each snout like 3 times. And the third time I used epoxy, and it stayed since.
Are you talking about the Toinami bookends from several years back?
Yes.
Okay. I've actually never owned those or even seen those in person, but they looked cool in photos. It's unfortunate that they are that fragile, though.
Mark, you have those, don't you?
Yeah, I got them. They're still sitting in the box. I only opened it up one time just to look at it, but yeah, I put it right back in the box and sitting on the shelf right now.
For you guys on the video, you guys can actually probably see it. It's to the side of my head, all the way on the back on the top of the shelf there.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I see
it.
Yeah, I see that.
Along with Greg's favorite Panache place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I could turn my computer's lame-o web camera around, I would show you. My collection pales in comparison to Mark's, I'm sure, Mr. Oliver's. But, yeah, I've just begun to finally get out a lot of my stuff and begin to put it on display. And I have a couple of boxed Panache Place Lion Voltron boxes. There are two different boxes that came out, one with a window on the front panel. This is all five lions in a gift set. And then there was one that had it was a solid box that had no window. And it's fun to see those things side by side. Yes, I am a Panache junkie, as are you, Doug, right?
Yeah, I do have every bit of it. And one of the things that I did was I took another Keith, and because I have a steady hand, I went ahead and used some tester's model paint and went ahead and made myself a Sven.
That's cool. So Mark, Morel,
yes.
I'm curious. You know, we're here as collectors. What are your thoughts about collecting? Would you consider yourself a fairly hardcore collector, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not as hardcore collecting certainly as you guys. Not by any stretch of the imagination, just because the amount of time I spend doing the things that I do. I have, you know, the regular job, and then I go out and I do the Toon Barn stuff, and then I'm doing the Voltron podcast, and I'm doing, you know, things with the family and stuff like that. It leaves very little time for me to even check out there and see what's going on. It's the podcast that's keeping me, you know, going with the Voltron collectibles, the ones that are new. But as to looking at older stuff, the only older stuff I've been able to look at is at some toy fairs and like RetroCon and a few other places. Of course, I've been to the Comic Cons, so there's always stuff for sale there.
Right.
And it's always interesting to come up to something that I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And there have been those types of things, and I'm always tempted to get like everything. And right. That's just the problem. I can't just afford to go out and buy everything there is.
Yeah.
So I have to pick and choose, and sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. So, you know, if it's, I've been a fan more of obviously the figures and of the art. So if I can get my hands on those, I'll get those. But I have all the Voltron comic books. So I already, there's Sven.
Yeah, so for anyone listening to this podcast who can't see what's going on as we record this, Doug is holding his custom Sven Panache Place figure up for us all to see and admire, and it is quite a sight. Very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so that's where I'm coming from as a collector, and you know, I would love to be able to say I want to get this, and this, and then go out and get them, but I just can't. I can't afford to do that right now.
I understand completely.
I'd like to know how Mark Oliver can.
Yeah.
Okay, it's civil. You don't have a girlfriend, or if you're married, like I'm not either one, so I don't have a girlfriend. I'm not married. Car's paid off. Rent's not that expensive, and really, that's it.
More power to you, man.
That would do it.
Yeah, but trust me. I mean, it does hurt. I mean, it does. It's not like you know, I have a problem where. You know, when I go out to eat, like I'll have an issue of paying $10 for a hamburger, but you know, I have no problem paying $230 for, you know, 30th anniversary Jumbo Voltron that sits on my shelf and does nothing but, you know, collect dust. So I don't know, but yeah,
priorities,
I think it's more
man.
Exactly.
That's cool. So I gotta ask you, Mark Oliver, if you don't mind. You know, you've got an enormous collection, and I have to ask. You know, Mark Morrell mentioned, you know, every now and then he sees something he's not seen before. Have you in any recent years gone to a convention or a show or been anywhere online and seen something from the old days that you didn't already know about? I'm curious.
The only things that I've only seen one time and I didn't know existed was by, I believe it was LGN's Master Control. I think I have it. I actually have it. It's behind me. It's the wireless radio control Voltron, which it was never, if you look on the back of the LGN box, it doesn't even have it on there. So it had to come out real late where basically it wasn't even wasn't very advertised, we'll say. So technically, if you look at it that way, yeah, LGN is wireless control Voltron, not the big, tall, the 24-inch giant commander, but this little wireless radio control Voltron.
I remember that I don't remember if you had shown that off in the Voltron Collectors Facebook group or not, but is that the one that has the same basic look as the one that they call it the computer control Lion Force? It looks like that, but it has a controller that looks like the one from the Giant Commander?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So they kind of took two projects and two different items and kludged them together, and it sounds like a pretty cool and unique end result.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of stuff, you know, I'll go on eBay, especially eBay, or I'll look on the internet, and there's some stuff I don't really ever see. Like, I'll see it once and never see it again. But once again, then they want these outrageous prices. There's one thing right now, which I don't know if you guys have gone on eBay or not, but some guy wants $1,000 for a big wheel, a Voltron big wheel, but there's no big wheel inside. It's just the box itself, and he wants $1,000 for it.
$1,000 for a box?
Empty box.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
But what a box.
Exactly. And the box is in bad shape. There's cuts and tears. Like, it's not worth more than, you know, $10. But
so nobody has bid on it, right?
No, nobody has. He had make me an offer. I put a dollar. He declined it.
So Doug, what are some things that have surprised you? Have you encountered any older items, in your internet travels or convention travels that surprise you as things you don't remember from the old days?
Well, unfortunately, because when in the old days, I didn't really get to go to a whole lot of toy stores because, you know, my parents knew better than to take me. there's a lot out there that I didn't know about. And there's stuff that I come across. Like when I first moved out to the town I'm in, there was this little, you know, side business run by two ladies that they just had a very miscellaneous toy shop. And sure enough, that there was actual Voltron pencils, completely brand new. And there was like, maybe 50 of them just sitting there loose. And I just grabbed a handful and said, how much? But there's a lot of other stuff that I've acquired through lots sold on eBay to where some of the stuff, like someone was showing a piece that was for the toothbrush, and it's to cover the top of the toothbrush so that way it stays clean or it stays dry or whatever. And for, you know, about 10 years, I've had it in my collection, and I had no idea what the heck it was. It was like a little, just the top of, Voltron's head. And, you know, it's like, it's got a little hole on the bottom. I was like, oh, what is this? And when I even asked the seller, I'm like, hey, thanks for all the other little knickknacks that came in the box. You mind explaining some of them? Like, I don't know, it was Voltron, so I just stuck it in there, man. I was like, okay.
That's funny.
Well, I was out there looking at your Voltron big wheel thing. They actually called that the Lion Force Cycle.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the empty box guy for $995. and then I also saw there's a guy trying to sell Voltron Lion Super Rare for $10,000. And his description on it is, Rare Voltron Lion stands about 6 to 7 inches robot form. Used Voltron lines with display cups, plastic, not metal, smoke-free, sold as is, no returns. $10,000.
That's it.
And no bids.
That's surprising.
I was about to ask if it was 10,000 pesos, because, wow.
10,000 U.S. dollars.
But, you know, people can ask whatever they want.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're going to get it.
That's right.
So, just like we've been asking for a lot of things ourselves as Voltron collectors and, you know, not getting it.
That's quite a segue there, Mark. I'm curious, you know, with us being collectors, what are some of those kinds of things that we would like to see that we have not seen over the last 30 plus years?
Castle Doom.
Well, yeah, the Castle Doom playset that was mentioned by Panache Place in their next catalog, right?
86.
Yeah. And then my big want is to have at least a scaled version of a Robe Beast going up against Voltron. You know, I would go for a 1 foot tall or a 2 foot tall. I don't care which, but something to go against the already existing Voltron statues and playsets and stuff.
What I would really, really like is the for that Robe Beast to be the one from LOTOR's Hitman. That would be bad.
Now, which was this? I don't recall the
LOTOR's Hitman is the one where the ship was so fast and it was piloted by, you know, this one green guy, and originally Hagar made it green and he requested it red, and you know. They had to do the Lionhead assault, but they were too slow.
Wasn't fast enough. Yeah, I remember that episode. Right.
Yeah. It also became part of the Viewmaster series.
I have to confess that my knowledge of specific episodes of the 80s series is not phenomenal. So, I mean, when I was part of the Third Dimension podcast, I rewatched the whole series, binge-watched the whole thing over the course of a couple of weeks to refamiliarize myself with the show. And I would have to do that with the entire 80s series to be able to remember any specific character or Robies from any specific show.
Well, maybe this will help. How many times did Voltron get formed more than once in an episode?
Oh, gosh. No idea.
Okay. Guess that didn't help.
I'm sorry. I remember the newer shows like Voltron Force and the Third Dimension far better from just from having more recently watched them.
Are you keeping track of these stats, Doug?
No, I just have one of those uniquely annoying brains that remembers that crap. But if you had me try to redo like a quadrilateral equation from algebra, I'd be toast.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got that kind of knowledge of, say, for the original Star Trek or the original Star Wars trilogy and things like that. But Voltron, I have not committed quite as deep into my memory in terms of the episode names and all that sort of thing. But I will tell you, if I were to say what dream collectible I would like to see, because, again, I am a Panache Place junkie, I would love for the Panache Place line to have gone the full nine yards with a Kenner Star Wars scale set of figures and vehicles and play sets. The 86 Toy Fair catalog, when I bought a copy of that just maybe 4 years ago and was browsing the pages, it got me thinking, holy moly, if this had been of, you know, Kenner Star Wars scale, I mean, just think how cool they could have been with many Robies or many, you know, going into the vehicle team episodes and doing a bunch of that stuff and you know, going into, you know, some of the characters who otherwise would never get any mention in a toy line. You know, Kenner had crazy characters like the Imperial Dignitary and all these goofy little critters from Jabba the Hutt's palace and Walrus Man and all these goofy characters. I would love to have seen some of the more unique characters done as action figures, and of course vehicles and all that. For example, what about that combining Robe Beast and Fleet of Doom? If each of those modules could have held an action figure of some kind, that would have been a neat toy. I would love to see not only the Castle Doom that was envisioned by Panache Place, but maybe one that is a little more on par with the Castle of Lions that was actually made. You know, something that looks a little more like they had in the TV show, and maybe has a little holding cell where you can stuff the pilots, you know, before they're about to go to the arena to meet their doom and all that sort of thing. I would love to have seen an action figure line a little larger than Panache Place was able to make.
I'd also, when I said I wanted a Robies to scale, my favorite Robies still is actually in the Voltron Force series. It's the Predator Robies. So I would like to have that, you know, Robies that came together combining those five animals into one giant Predator Robies.
Yeah. I think the combiner Robies are always my favorite. Like the one from Fleet of Doom, Dracotron in the Third Dimension,
right.
Predator
right.
Robeast in Voltron Force. It's just, it's kind of neat to, you know, do a bit more of an even Steven battle, you know. What are your thoughts, Mark Oliver? You've been pretty quiet.
No, you know, I was thinking about this, and I'll tell you, like, we already had the Castles of Lions, but somehow, like, my dream toy we never had would have been the Castle of Lions that would have turned into the Flying Fortress.
Oh, wow. That would be cool.
Yeah. And but, you know, it was only done in one episode, basically, or maybe two, depending on, I guess it was a three-part episode or a two-part episode, but,
yeah, it would be hard, it'd be pretty hard to recreate that old castle turning into the new castle after it became the ship, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Because the old castle sort of got destroyed around it, and then the new castle emerged from it.
Right.
And, yeah, that would have been hard to recreate as a toy where you could keep doing that over and over again.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah.
Well, we all could dream, can't we?
Yeah.
That's true. But, you know, the Kenner made for its Batman and Batman Returns line in the early 90s a Batmobile that could pop off the side panels and basically become that weird-looking bat missile from the second film. I can almost imagine a Castle of Lions with basically shell pieces, you know, for around the towers, basically the base of the castle, where you could pop those off and then, you know, extend what's left, the tops of the towers and the central column, and make that weird looking flying fortress ship out of that. I think it would be doable. I don't know if you could put any characters inside of it with all that transforming stuff, but it would certainly be a fun thing to play with on a desk.
Right. And if you were to design a new type of toy that hasn't been made before for Voltron, what would it be?
A new type of toy?
A new type, yeah. We've had the electronic ones, we've had the remote control ones, we've had the transforming ones, the combining ones. We've had toys that were in the shape of guns, you know, toys that, that were... like either bikes or planes, you know, all these different types of things. What type of toy that hasn't been made for Voltron yet would you want to make?
Wow.
Interactive.
All right. So we're going really future high tech now, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. How would it be interactive?
Well, it could be interactive by tactile or by vision.
Okay.
So what's it interacting with? Are you shining a light on it or pushing buttons on it or talking to it or all of the above?
Well, Greg, I remember you saying that an Imaginext set would be really cool, and I actually got an Imaginext set for my son, a castle set, and... when the dragon comes near the castle, the two of the toys, you know, I guess have Bluetooth, and they sense each other. And
oh, cool.
So the castle says different things depending on whether you are bringing the dragon near it or the ogre to it or whatever. You know, so, and the batteries are typically watch type batteries or even AAA. So they're not really hard to come by batteries.
That's a neat concept.
Yeah.
My daughter actually, she has Fisher-Price Little People Disney Princesses. She's got this castle, and you put the little princesses on the dance floor in the castle, and depending on which one you place, it's the figurines themselves don't do anything, but they have different little buttons on the bottom, little studs that stick out. And when they press different things on the dance floor, that causes the castle to say the voice or sing a song of whatever princess they stick there. I was thinking, yeah, based on your idea, what if there was a lion and you stick a Keith figure in there and you hear a line of Keith, you know, saying something about flying the lions, or you put Daniel in there and he says, you know, wah, I don't want to get out of this lion or something like that, you know, that something like that might be fun. I like that idea.
I saw something at San Diego Comic-Con that was, you know, usually made for casinos. Big Bang Theory had a new slot machine kind of type of thing. Now, I had seen, I had been to the Sands Casino in Bethlehem and had seen the Batman 66 TV show version of this when it had Batman and Robin on it. But this one had the Big Bang Theory, and as you're playing it, it goes into different modes. You hear different sound effects from the show. You hear, you know, different sounds that are generated from the show. And then at various times, you go in from one level to the next level to the next level. And as you go up levels, you have the chance to see actual scenes from the TV show. And I would love to see an interactive, like you were saying, Doug, type of game like that, where as you increase your levels or as you get different things done, or maybe you get lucky or something like that, it goes into a mode where you see actual clips from the shows, or you get to see behind the scenes kind of things, or you get to see different things about Voltron, maybe Voltron lore, Voltron legend type stuff. You know, you get to learn more and more about Voltron and the history of Voltron as you play it, and you get to see more of the things you love about Voltron as you're playing it. That's the kind of thing I would like. It doesn't have to be a casino game, obviously. Something more for the family.
That's a cool idea, too. Mark, did you have any ideas, thoughts?
You know, we did have a video game for the PlayStation and the Xbox Live. And I'd really like to have like a real video game, like a platform video game, like a hard, you know, I don't actually want a disc in my hand of a full, you know, full Voltron game. But the thing is for me is, how do you make that? Do you make it role playing? Do you make it strategy? Like, how do you make a game like that? I would love to see like a full Voltron game.
I think it would have to be an adventure game. I don't think they could do it as a strategy game, you know, where you're pitting yourself against Doom or something like that. I don't want to go into that miniature style games like
Castle Crashers.
Yeah, something that you know, where it's all about the strategy, and you have to build up your fortresses and build up your arsenals and your weapons and all these kind of things, and you actually have to, it takes forever for you to build up to be able to actually win a battle or something like that. But you know, I wouldn't want to have it be that type of a game. I'd want it to be an adventure game where you could actually get into one of the pilots and pilot it yourself, and then get together with four other players and form your own Voltron. You know, and you know, you'd always have to be one of the Voltron pilots, or you know, you could be Karan, or maybe you could be Zarkon, or you could be Lotor or something like that. But you know, in Star Wars they have Battlefront. And in Battlefront, you can pretty much do anything you want within the Star Wars universe. I mean, you could be a Jedi, you could be any type of character, you could be a pilot, a smuggler, anything. And you can go around and pilot your ships, you can go from planet to planet, you can get yourself lost in some of the scenes that you've seen from the movies. And I'd like to see that similar type of thing with Voltron.
Yeah, that's cool. An interesting idea. I'm not into a lot of gaming, so I'm, you know, my philosophy is my brain doesn't, I can't process more than one joystick and one button. So when the original Nintendo came out, I realized how lacking I am when it comes to playing games. But it does sound cool. It does make me wonder, though. It's something that I've always wondered while watching the shows. What are all the other pilots doing when they actually form the robot? So let's pretend you're in a game and you got five people and you form Voltron. What do the non-leader guys do? What if you're not Keith of the Lion Force or Jeff of the vehicle team, what do they do except scream when the robot gets hit?
Do what Mark Morrell just did. take a sip of water.
There you go.
No, they sit in their cockpits and they you know, slowly but surely get lodged into place as part of Ultron, right? I mean, what else are you going to do? I mean, there's not much to do.
Yeah, I guess maybe try to stay in your seat as the robot is jumping around and kicking and all that other sort of thing. I always wonder how they stay in their seat, too. Maybe they have some kind of artificial gravity or something to keep them in there. But
I told you, it's on a gyroscope, okay? So no matter what their plane of reference is, okay, if they're in space, okay, there's no gravity, so they don't really have to worry about it there. You know, they can stay bolted into their seatbelt or whatever, and it's no big deal. But if they're in a place where there is gravity, then they would have to be on a gyroscope kind of thing, wouldn't they?
Yeah, except it wouldn't stop acceleration. It would help with the rotation, but you'd still be starting and stopping and probably losing your lunch. So I think you'd have to be really careful about when you eat lunch versus when you decide to jump into a lion or a vehicle, I think.
Yeah, well, if it was Voltron Force, they would have those suits that would just build up around them using the Voltcom. So it would hold any of the G-forces in, you know.
Voltcom barf bag.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So if I were to answer the question, you know, dream collectible, I would say, as Doug alluded to, I've been all about these recent Imaginext toys that have come out. There's a set of dinosaurs, five dinosaurs that have little drivers, some of which look a lot like the Voltron Force pilots, actually. Coincidence, who knows, because Fisher-Price is a Mattel brand, and Mattel had a Voltron license at about the time Voltron Force came out. But in any case, there's a five dinosaurs, and each of them has this armor thing that fits around the dinosaurs, similar to the Dino Riders toys of the 80s. But you can pop off the armor bits and make a combiner robot from the armor bits and have each pilot sit in its respective armor thing. And it's a really simple combination. The connectors are really solid. So I keep thinking, wow, an Imaginext line of Voltron Force toys would have totally rocked. Where, you know, it's okay if the robot's proportions are a little bit bulky, you know, because the Fisher-Price, the Imaginext motif, you know, is kind of stylized. I like to see that, and also because I'm all about the new Transformers Combiner Wars toys that have been on shelves lately. I was sort of thinking of the old Star Wars Transformer toys of a few years back that looked horrible in robot mode, but the concept of Star Wars vehicles turning into robots, the concept was cool. The execution was less than cool. But to have, say, five robot lions that could morph into cyborgish pilots, maybe, and then form a robot might be fun, might. But I think the end result might be less than satisfying.
Yeah, I remember the Star Wars Boba Fett Slave One ship. When it transformed into a Transformer, it didn't look anything like anything. It was kind of ugly looking.
Yeah, most of those things were. I think the concept, like I said, is pretty neat. But the Hasbro, they seem to be doing all the right things with their Combiner Wars toys. I mean, the robots, I mean, they're just robots and not anthropomorphized in any way as humans. But they look really slick in all the modes, and maybe something Voltron-ish along those lines might be fun. But I'm much more of an Imaginext and you know, panache place, you know, going the full nine yards with a ton of figures. That's what I would like to have seen.
What is the key to holding the interest of a child these days with a toy that is based on a show?
That's a great question. Does anybody else have thoughts on this before I jump into mine?
Well, with my son, he's basically certain toys are he'll just, you know, throw them around or whatever else like that. But he's got this one. It's there's Violet and Scout, and they're little dogs. Violet is purple, and Scout is green, I think. And Scout's supposed to be for the boys, and Violet's supposed to be for the girls. And you can program their name into it through a USB connection. You can choose the songs and stuff like that. So it keeps saying his name, and he just, you know, press one of three paws, and he, you know, does various things. So as long as the toy interacts with the child nowadays, kind of like with a lot of the ThinkPad games, etc., etc. Interactivity, you know, where, you know, basically, you know, for all three of us, the interactivity for us was in our heads. We were imagining it. You know, we were imagining we were on Eris. We were imagining that, you know, we were jumping into the Red Lion on our bicycle, flying down the hill at breakneck speeds. Whereas now, unfortunately, a lot of the imagination has been taken out by, you know, video output. But so, yeah, that's my take on, you know, how my son interacts, as well as there's new annoying little mechanical dog thing that a friend of ours gave us, and it does some eye movement and it does some songs, but the songs are what's annoying, because it sounds like the soundtrack for the song, it gets stuck in a loop for about 10 to 15 seconds, and then it continues to where it's like I'm wanting to take a hammer to the stupid thing when it gets in its loop.
Right.
But my son loves it. He keeps pushing the damn button.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, so go ahead, Greg. Yeah, based on your kids.
Okay, I have one child who will be 4 in August, and she's got a very, very strong imagination. I mean, when I first showed her Voltron Force, the one episode that I would show her early on was the Gary episode with the little Pokemon or Kremzeek kind of characters that jumped into the lions and wreaked all havoc and ultimately kissed Voltron during the final battle. And it was a really soft entry into Voltron. You know, I was very concerned about her being exposed to a lot of violent content and stuff like that at such a young age. But she loves Voltron Force now, to the point that she calls herself a Voltron expert. And she knows all the characters and all that. So I was planning to design her some custom lions to go with her Barbie dolls, because she has Barbie and Ken dolls that she will call the Voltron pilots and cadets. And they look nothing like the characters. They don't have outfits that look anything like anything from the TV show, but that doesn't stop her. Her imagination is very vivid. I ultimately, just because I don't have time to do another custom project with my vehicle Voltron thing taking forever, I gave her a beat-up old set of Panache Place lions. And even though her Barbies, which she still uses as the pilots, don't fit in those lions, which were scaled for 3 3/4 inch action figures, she still has those lions piloted by those Barbie dolls. And so she's not into the interactive stuff, you know, that Fisher-Price Princess Castle notwithstanding. She generally still likes old school dolls and you know, little baby dolls and all that. So I think as she gets older, I'll probably see her skew toward electronic things. But for now, if it's an action figure that looks like a human being, it's going to pass as a pilot or Lotor or Mayhawks, which she always has me play when we play together. But I don't know. I mean, from that young of an age, I don't see the interactive needs yet, but that could change. It very likely will. What are your thoughts to both Marks? What are your thoughts?
I bought my niece a toy from VTech, and basically what you could do is you could buy either it's a blue one for boy or purple or pink for a girl. I believe they had a green one for the boys as well. And what you could do is you could program it from your iPhone to have it say, I think, up to 100 and something phrases, and you could pick which ones you want from your phone. You just hook it up to like a USB in there, and you can program it that way. I think we're at the point now where it used to be kids, like especially our age, used to go to the toy store and actually hold an action figure and play with an action figure. It's not like that anymore. Now kids, instead of grabbing the action figure, grab an iPad, or not even an iPad, but just like a tablet or a phone, anything with like technology. So I think it now, like, toys are almost an afterthought compared to what they have right now.
Have you noticed what kids are getting at birthday parties these days instead of those tactile things that you can get in a box?
What's that?
What they've been getting at birthday parties as gifts from other kids.
I believe it would probably be something along the lines of something electronic, I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, it has to do with, like, iTunes gift cards, mm-hmm. Google Play, you know, Amazon gift cards, maybe Steam. you know, a gift card or something like that. But it's definitely not those boxed items that you used to get, you know, that were action figures or that were, you know, things that you could hold that you could play with and imagine things with. It's a shame because, you know, there's so many cool things that kids could be doing, but they're all driven towards the technology.
Yeah, it really saddens me. I mean, I'm, you know, I realize that as I'm within a sneeze of turning 40, that you know, my opinion about the young kids demographic means pretty much nothing. But it saddens me. I'm wearing a retro blasting T-shirt right now. You know, Yahoo! Michael French and Melinda Mock. You know, hey guys. You know, they talk about the days of yesteryear and the pop culture of that time, and I think that kids these days have a great thing going. I mean, obviously, there, you know, there's some. I mean, as I re-experience the world through my young daughter's eyes, I think she still has at her young age the sense of wonder that I recall having into my much older years than she is now, but. It saddens me if that really is, and it sounds like it is a trend in, you know, squelching your imagination and, you know, burying your mind and your attention in software that someone else has written. It saddens me a little, you know. I mean, I think there's a lot to be gained by pretending.
Yeah, I agree. I can tell you, I was recently in San Diego and I interviewed Kevin Smith, and Kevin Smith was talking about Scooby-Doo at the time, and he was mentioning how he wishes that it was still that time back in the 70s where kids watched Saturday morning cartoons so that he could, you know, someday show up as a guest on a Scooby-Doo cartoon like they did with Don Knotts and Phyllis Diller and all those kind of things, because that was, you know, something that happened on those Scooby-Doo episodes back then. And, you know, Scooby-Doo was able to stay around for several iterations, you know, through the 70s and 80s and maybe even into the 90s. But that was because for that long a period of time, we were able to, you know, keep kids entertained on a Saturday morning with cartoons. Nowadays, kids are all doing their own things, but a lot of times it has to do with some type of device.
Right.
And it's not so much the kids are going outside and playing in the neighborhood with the other kids even.
Now, I will say that I watched a DVR'd episode of Bubble Guppies this morning with my little kid, and RuPaul was a guest voice actor. So it does appear that there are celebrities who make guest appearances on today's cartoons.
And they're not A-list celebrities.
That's true.
Right. Because I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the next topic you guys want to bring up?
Well, let's talk about things that you own in your collections. What are things that you would say are your favorite items in your collections?
I'm looking around right now, and you know, one that kind of just jumps out right at me is the Trendmasters Voltron, the diecast metal. And the only reason why I would say that is because it kind of brought me back into Voltron altogether. That was the first time I saw Voltron toys on the shelves since in the 80s. And to see that again, and actually, at the time, I think I was maybe 16 when this came out, I had a job. I actually worked at a toy store, and to actually see it there, and I was able to actually buy it with my own money. I mean, that to me feels like, you know, that was my favorite toy.
All right. Does that toy store still exist?
No. It used to be called Family Toy Warehouse, and they are not in business anymore. But I will tell you, they actually had the most, like, Voltron toys. They didn't have what they had there. They didn't have it at Toys R Us. So I was able to get basically everything there. I got the Trendmaster Voltron there, and I got the Stealth figures from there and the Voltrex Voltron from there.
Okay, so this is a more of a sentimental value for you because it brought you back to Voltron.
Basically, yes.
Okay. How about you, Doug?
Well, with the stuff that I've got, similar to Mark Oliver, I basically was getting into the collecting again, and stopped by Toys R Us, and the Trendmasters diecast set that I got, I went ahead and picked up for I believe it's 1995 is the sticker on my Trendmasters case, and it was really nice. I didn't like the four flimsy pieces of tape that quote unquote sealed it shut, though. I was like, really? This is sealed? This is ridiculous. A fly can fly in there. So, but when I went to go buy another one, they had switched over. They had gone from the die cast using the mold similar to the original Matchbox and the Go Lion, and they went to the more plastic one, and I didn't buy that. That was the Trendmasters one was the only one that I bought of Trendmasters toy line whatsoever. But a lot of the other stuff I've gotten like the Monsterpocalypse board game and some of the other stuff. But for the most part, my collection usually revolves around some of the more vintage stuff.
Okay. Vintage like what?
Well, let's see here. Behind me, and I know the podcast, you know, can't see it, but I've got the lunchbox on the one shelf there, complete with the thermos. And one of the other things that I did get, someone created it, and they loaded their video up on YouTube. Okay, so what this person did was they went and created a model.
Oh, wow.
My word.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so very quickly, what we're seeing, podcast listeners, is an enormous green lion head. And when I say enormous, it looks like it's got to be roughly the size of a human head. Is that about right?
With a snout coming out.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Custom made. This is quite cool.
What is it made of?
Before all the paint, a Little Caesar's pizza box.
Oh, wow. That doesn't even look like a pizza box.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good paint job.
Yeah.
Oh, my. And the on the back side of the head, you can see the what looks like the connector ring of Green Lion and a bunch of techno stuff, as if maybe the head was severed from Voltron's arm. That's really interesting.
Wow.
And the usual little dots on the side are actual just bottle caps, not metal bottle cap, but, you know, 2 liter or 1 liter or 20 ounce bottle caps. The guy's got loaded it up on YouTube, and the video is kind of like time lapse.
He's describing an enormous green lion head made out of corrugated cardboard and other odds and ends.
It looks to me like something
you would build as a filming miniature for a feature film. It is absolutely amazing.
That looks amazing.
Can you show the eyes a little bit more, please? Look into the eyes.
Incredible.
That is amazing.
Wow. Doug, how'd you do that? Or how long did it take you to do that?
I did not do it. A person did it, and then they came on the Voltron board, and they offered it for sale. And there was a couple of members who were interested, but they fell through on fulfilling the obligation. And so they contacted me, and they said, by the way, are you still interested? I'm like, that hasn't sold yet? And they're like, no. I was like, ding, mine.
That is awesome.
That is like somebody doing Voltron fan art, but in the sculpture form. That is just amazing.
That's really cool. Yep.
And a one-of-a-kind piece.
That's really slick.
I have something Mark Oliver doesn't.
You win.
That's amazing. So I don't have my video feed turned on at this moment, but I guess I could fetch it out. If we were talking about favorite collectibles, number one of the mass-produced stuff, it has to be the Voltron toys that are action figure-based. And so, again, I go back to Panache Place. The enormous Mighty Lion vehicle set from Trendmasters for V3D, as fragile as as maddeningly fragile as that toy is, the play value in those enormous lions is just unmatched. And then the Maddie Collector lions, I think those are really, really nice. of unique things. I do happen to own an animation cell from Dyroger 15, which shows the five members of the Air Team or the Aki Team. That's a fun bit. And then I, in addition to making that custom vehicle Voltron, an action figure customizer made custom pilots for the vehicle team, which I really, really enjoy. So those are one of a kind as well.
I'd have to say the one that gets the most attention for me is the 30th anniversary Voltron. People look at that and they see everything about Voltron right then and there. There's probably nothing else that gets me that much attention. I wore my Voltron socks one time and people were really wondering what that was about. Why are you wearing one blue sock and one yellow sock? So, you know, I got a little bit of conversation going just with that one. But other than that, I own a set of tableware or like a tablecloth and napkins and cups and stuff like that. And I had that on display at RetroCon last year at the Let's Voltron booth. But other than that, I don't think I have anything that's rare.
One of the things that I do have that I think is rare, I'm not sure. Mark Oliver, you can confirm this or not. Are you still receiving video feed, Mark?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So this was apparently only released over in the UK. And you know how the Lion pilots, they've got the tunnels and the little ships to take them to the Lions, and they've got that, you know, incorporated into the Panache Place castle.
Right.
And for a vehicle team, they just jump in their vehicles. But for the Gladiator Voltron or Albegus, they actually had three individual ships that they would fly into their respective robots. And that is what this is. It is all three of them do combine into this one ship. And it's made of diecast. And it's relatively heavy. As you can see, it's got some landing struts that like to come out no matter what. But, whose is whose? I have no idea. As far as the red, black, and blue robot, I don't know whose is whose. But I found this on an eBay auction one time by searching for Arbegus rather than Albegus.
Well, I just recently saw a YouTube video of somebody who had made their own fan-made Albegus opening or Albegus opening that was combined with other, you know, elements from the existing vehicle Voltron and Lion Force Voltron. And I did see the portion where they showed the ships going into an opening in the back of each one, and that was their way of getting into their individual ship. So as they combined together.
Yes.
That's a really cool vehicle. I have no clue about how rare it might be, but it sure does look neat. I wish the Albegus Voltron 2 toy in combined form looked as cool as that vehicle does in combined form.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very rare. I've personally never seen that before. That was the first time I ever seen it. So thank you for sharing that with me, with all of us.
Yeah, not a problem. I've also done something else that for my Albegus set. Hold on a sec.
We're getting quite a show and tell here, folks. Mark, it might be fun if some of us would maybe share some photos of some of our prized items.
And I think that would be a great idea, and then I can put it out on the website when we release the show.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
So,
What's this, Doug?
Doug, real quick, I was just suggesting to Mark that maybe we could send some photos of some of our items to Mark to post on the Let's Voltron page.
Yeah.
But anyway, what you got there?
Okay, so this is a combination American and Japanese Albegus / Gladiator Voltron. A fan that, because what I did is a couple of years ago over at the Washington State Fair, I submitted my collection in, and, you know, for just display to, you know, show off and, you know, get some more fan interest into it. And this guy contacted me, and he's like, "Hey, man, I've got a Gladiator Voltron just kind of it's been sitting around in my house for, you know, forever, and you know, I'd like to go to someone that would appreciate it." I'm like, "Well, heck, I will appreciate it." And when I met up with him, it was not Gladiator Voltron; it was the Albega set. But the some of the joints were faded on his Japanese set, and so what I did was I noticed that the blue robot that is so notoriously fragile on the American set is not fragile on the Japanese set. And so I went ahead and unscrewed and took apart, you know, both pieces, and I used basically the upper section of the American robot and the middle section of the Japanese robot for my blue. And I then made sure to incorporate all the arms of the Japanese set, because the arms on the Japanese set have fists that fire.
Oh, cool.
That's slick. And
yeah, so of course, everything on the Japanese originals, whether it's the miniature set or the other, all the fists or the lion heads for the lion one, they actually fire. And I never knew that until later on, that the even the miniature ones fired off. So I thought that was really cool. And the of course, the other bonus part of having the guy give me that is the actual sword that looks kind of ridiculous, but because it's the actual sword for the actual piece, it's something that I liked. I did have a gentleman create a reproduction of the sword.
Oh, wow.
And it looked good, but the problem was is after time of the robot standing like this and holding the sword like it is, kind of just, you know, with the arm crooked at a 90-degree angle and just holding the sword, the sword would eventually, you know, start tilting over and not based on the hand grip, but based on like the middle piece of the sword would, you know, it's like whatever they used for the reproduction wasn't sturdy enough. It's like I need to spray it with starch or something to make it more stiff. I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, that's pretty slick. That's a neat piece.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is it in the long run a worth more money? No. I probably actually undervalued it. Kind of like with my loose battle cat. I actually painted his teeth and I painted the mouth. You know, because number one, it's loose. Number two, it's from my childhood. And number three, it's like, okay, I want the teeth to actually look white on all sides of the teeth, not just the front.
Yeah, so, you know, you raise an interesting point. You know, you're talking about are you devaluing it or increasing value and whatnot. Is it fair to assume that we don't really collect with the idea of reselling anyway? I mean, as Voltron gets older and its original viewing audience, you know, gets older, assuming nothing comes down the turnpike in terms of a feature film. I think there will be future projects, but, you know, the heyday was certainly the mid-80s. Do we buy these things with the expectation that we're going to resell them at some point and make some massive profit, or do we just do it because we love the stuff?
I do it because I love the stuff. I mean, you know. Come on.
He's holding up his green lion head again, and yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, I do it because I love it, and there's no reason for me to resell this. Why would I do that?
Yeah, yeah. I'm in the same boat.
I'm definitely in the same boat. Like, people are, you know, people tell me, oh, you know, you could sell it, get so much money. It's not about the money. It never was. I mean, I started collecting because I love the cartoon. You know, I love the show, obviously, and this is just, you know, just like a hobby of mine, and I enjoy it. I enjoy doing it, and I'm going to continue doing it till, I don't know, whenever, till I get maybe every single thing that I, you know, that's out there. But I still, you know, I feel like I got a long way to go. So there's, you know, there's always stuff coming out. There's still stuff I don't have. So
I think Doug's holding on tight to that green lion head, Mark. I don't think he's going to get that.
Doug,
one.
I'm going to take that lion head from you. I'll trade you my lion head for my costume for that thing. That's an even trade.
Wow.
What, the 80s Halloween costume?
No, I made my own Voltron costume.
Did you see the one that he wore at New York Comic Con?
No, I did not.
Yeah, he's got pictures online of his costume from New York Comic Con.
Yeah, okay. I actually saw the costume. I've met Mark Oliver once face-to-face at St. Louis Wizard World Con in 2014, and he had the costume there, and it was really, really impressive.
Nice. Yeah, so one of the things that I want to share that I intend to do is later on when my son gets older, so he can appreciate it and remember it for, you know, into adulthood, is I'll redo my collection out to the Washington State Fair. But one of the things that I will specifically do is, because every year I go to the fair, and every year, despite the fact that they always say they want collections not repeating every year, but every year there's a Transformers display that has emphasis on Optimus Prime every single year. I've got the anniversary edition Takara Optimus Prime myself, but what I intend on doing was, when I do my display piece, I'm going to have the 30th anniversary Voltron, or the 20th, probably my 20th one, and the new vehicle Voltron that came out. They're going to be on either side of Optimus Prime. Optimus Prime is going to be down on one knee with his hands up like this, you know, like in an I surrender, and they're both going to have their blazing swords at his head.
Oh, that's funny.
That's great.
That's funny, yeah.
I'm going to make sure to put little captions that say, "We are not Transformers."
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Now, that you actually brought up something that I was hoping we would maybe talk about, and that's items that are unlicensed. Okay? This is the official Voltron podcast, but we are also collectors, and you know, as collectors, we are not exactly. I'm looking at your Green Lion head, and of course, I've got my vehicle team custom figures and all that. But you know, we are fans, and certainly respect WEP's intellectual property and the licenses that its licensees have and all that. But we would be remiss, I think, and not at least making passing mention of the fact that unlicensed items do exist. And so I'm curious to see what general thoughts are about such things. And I realize we're in kind of a weird territory because, again, WEP rocks, and so does Voltron, and so do its licensees. But having said that, what are your thoughts on you mentioned Vehicle Voltron, which is the unlicensed Miracle Metalworks item. What are your thoughts on unlicensed items in general?
Well, I like them because it brings more to the table, you know, and it might also, you know, if the Miracle Productions has enough interest and garners enough, that might show WEP that there is indeed a market for Vehicle Voltron, and to go ahead and actually do it, because otherwise they're like, well, you know, the same reason for the 80s cartoons, that Lion outperformed Vehicle, and that's why Gladiator never even, you know, came to be. Where that was the original, you know, premise of doing it, because, you know, you got the boxes of Voltron 1, 2, 3,
right?
And Voltron 2 just, you know, never came to be, and you know, so they're still on that thinking that, you know, it's like, okay, we've got these Lion toys, all right, they're selling, you know, so we don't really want to risk doing Vehicle because it didn't perform as well as Lion. But you know, the thing is that if a third party comes along and, you know, does it, and it's received really well, and they've done a marvelous job, I've just not been able to save up enough money to be able to purchase one myself. Mark Oliver probably has four of them. I'm gonna talk to him on the side. And then there's also the other Beast King one that was done, and so it looks different than the Toynami set. And you know, the thing that I was kind of hoping for with the 30th anniversary would be that they would update their mold just a little bit, tweak it somehow. But it looks like all they did is they put some batteries and some LEDs in Voltron's head. And that's what all it seems to be, is the only difference between the 30th and 20th anniversary is light up eyes and the base with the weapons that was promised with the 20th.
Well, as far as items that are unlicensed going out, there's going to be people like the guy that made that green lion head that just want to make their own stuff that's something that hasn't been made before. And it's not that they necessarily have the idea that they're going to mass produce it, you know, and sell it around the world and stuff like that. I think it's just that they want certain things to be seen that haven't been seen before.
I do think that it's fun to see what different parties can bring to the table. I do own the Miracle production, the vehicle Voltron, the MA-01, I think they call it. And it's a very nice piece. It's certainly not Bandai quality, but I think it is of comparable quality to the Toynami Lion releases. And I do like it very much. I do wish that these guys would play ball with WEP and go the right way, you know. To be frank with you, recently this Voltron Altimites release, not the new one that transforms, but that the original super deformed one, I recall there was briefly a version of this, the same mold that was sold that was not branded with Toynami or the word Voltron, as I recall. And so it appeared that, from what I could tell, that maybe Toynami kind of worked with them to make this something that would benefit that group and perhaps themselves in a licensed capacity. And so I've been hoping that maybe Toynami or a similar licensee would reach out to Miracle and bring their item to market in a way that, you know, gets Webb's blessing, you know. I do very much like that release. And of course, Voltron so-called bootleg items date all the way back to the 80s, of course, with the Lion Bot releases and the, I believe, Godaiken had a Go Lion release, which may or may not have interfered with WEP's licensed Matchbox item. And of course, there were many, many bootlegs of Lion and Vehicle 80s molds over the years. I think the last time I saw the a bootlegged vehicle team mold was around the late 90s, early 2000s. Toys R Us had an item. I forget what it was called. I don't have the box to mind anymore, but it was off color. I mean, all the vehicles were colored differently than the legitimate colors. But it was a neat item, but certainly not a licensed one. As a collector, I mean, I can't ignore that these items exist, and some of them are very appealing. But at the same time, I do wish that they would play ball the right way and seek out appropriate licenses and you know, be more above the table, as it were.
How about you, Mark?
Yeah, like how Greg mentioned the Lion Bot. I believe it wasn't licensed. I do have a Lion Bot, and what's so, like, the only thing that's, you know, that's really good about it is it does have the missiles, and it does have, like, you know, weapons with it, unlike how the Matchbox Voltron had, basically all it came with was just the lions, because you had to buy the Blazing Sword separately. So I could see where people would, you know, would go for, like, more of the bootleg stuff and unlicensed stuff over than, you know, the originals, but for me as a collector, I try to get the licensed products. I pretty much, outside Lion Bot, I might have two other things that might be like a bootleg. Other than that, I look for the you know, the Voltron stamp from, you know, WEP and, you know, whatever license that they have, what they're under at that time. So for me, I just basically stick with licensed products.
All right. I wanted to ask one final question of all of you. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Sure.
What do you think the future of collecting is? Not just Voltron collecting, but collecting for these retro properties in general. But you know, are we still, you know, in a position where we're going to be looking on eBay to find anything that we're looking for? Or do you think the future of collecting is going to change into and morph into something else?
Well, I think that eBay is a good front for finding general stuff. But if you're looking to try to find the really hard stuff like Dracotron, Greg and I have talked on the side about this, the 86 toy line, and I don't know if Oliver or Morrell know. I actually went and did some real investigative digging, and I actually contacted Panache Place employees, former, and got all the way to this guy that was in Hong Kong that was able to go to the old building where it was produced to see if there was any molds, anything left to try to acquire any part of that 86 toy line. And unfortunately, everything fell through. But, you know, I know, as well as, you know, Greg knows, that somewhere out there, Mark Oliver, there's probably someone who actually does have some of that 86 toy line.
Yeah, we're talking, for those who don't know, Panache Place had shown in their 86 retail catalog for Toy Fair a second wave of toys that never reached production. And we alluded to it earlier, but this is just speaking to it more directly. There were 11 figures and several vehicles in that Castle Doom playset. Yeah, I mean, so what are you saying then? eBay works for the general stuff, but for that kind of stuff, what are your
thoughts
there?
You'd have to have a specialist or, you know, something along those lines of being, you know, the inside trader lines, kind of like.
Hey, Mark Oliver, what if WEP was to put together a website that actually brought all the collectors together into one place?
Okay.
What would we call it?
Well, I believe we probably would call it figures.com. And, we're still working on that. I haven't heard much about it still. Last I heard, they had basically the setup for it, like a beta site, and I tried logging in to give me like a user password and all that stuff, and I couldn't get in. I contacted them. I haven't heard anything back, but it was supposed to launch around, I believe it was like 2013, and, you know, we're hopefully getting it closer, and hopefully we'll see it eventually soon. Be a good time right around Comic-Con. Would be a good time to announce it.
Yeah. That would be a good time.
Right.
It, basically what it is, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, and of course we want to talk to Tiffany and we want to talk to the other people involved with it once it launches. But it's basically, you know, where you can bring your collection to the table, to everybody else's collection to the table, your wish list, your everything. I mean, basically everything that was ever licensed, that was ever made through WEP, will be on the site. And you know, you'll be able to see pictures of it. You'll be able to see descriptions and everything. And then you'll also be able to say, okay, these are the ones that I have. These are the ones that I want. And you can mix with the other people in a community where you can talk about each other's collections. You can trade. You can do all kinds of things. So we're really much looking forward to that because, I mean, instead of having to go to 100 different places to find these things, it's like bringing it all into one for one property.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating idea. I hope that does move forward soon.
All right. I want to thank you guys for joining me on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. We had a fun discussion here talking about all kinds of Voltron collectibles, past, present, future, and other dimensions.
Nice.
So we're looking forward to, obviously, more Voltron collectibles coming out that we can all buy, that we can, you know, spend our hard-earned money on, and have them sit on our shelves because we're not planning on reselling them ever.
That's true.
That's right.
All right. So thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Doug, for joining us for the first time.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We'll see all of you next time on
Let's Voltron.